my parents didn't always have like a big say in what we were going to do as kids. I remember I was 11, 12 years old and I was hanging out in the streets till 3 a.m. like with my buddies. Like my parents, I feel like part of them trusted me to do the right thing, and then part of them just didn't care what I did. And so my parents, I'd come home with my report card. Okay, I got D's and C's. They give me a little pep talk. Bren, you know, you got to try harder in school. You know, you got to do better. You could be more successful. And I just shrug it off and then go back to doing what I was doing. And so that was a good thing for me in a way, because it allowed me to make my own decisions and build my own path and go my own way. But at the same time, you know, who knows what would have happened if my parents would have pushed me to go to school and do that whole thing.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 109, with musician and speaker Bren Dubay.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, girls and guys, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, JC Preston, founder of New Inceptions and the brand new Facebook group called The Junto. You know, this is the show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Hope you're having an awesome start to your November. I know we are in the Junto with over 135 people thus far. You know, we're starting to pick up a little bit of steam. You know, engagement is up, and you know, thus far we've done a few live shows at C317 here in Indy, you know, discussing some topics that we think most entrepreneurs have to deal with at some point in their journey. And if you'd like to join us, you can check it out by visiting newinceptions.com/thejunto or simply doing a search for The Junto on Facebook, and it's spelled J-U-N-T-O. Now, today's guest is someone that Veronica and I had the chance to interview this past summer. His name is Bren Dubay, and for a time, he and his brother had a pretty successful band up in Canada. And what you're going to find out through this conversation is that, you know, his success wasn't everything he would have liked it to have been. And in fact, when his brother decided he was going to quit the band, Bren just lost it. You know, he had a total breakdown, but he was able to pull himself out of his funk by utilizing eventually what he calls the three foundations of change. And today he helps other people do the same thing. So in today's session, we're going to be talking about how he first got into music, why his brother decided to call it quits on the band, what he feels his role is as part of the new hero generation. And again, we look at those three foundations of change. Before we get into that, I want to talk a little thing about Fizzle. You know, it's amazing when you decide how to spend your own time. And the best way to do that is through your own business. And that business can look like anything you really want it to be. Now, here's the catch. It's one thing to know a skill, to be able to monetize it even. For example, you know, building sales funnels. But it's another thing altogether to know how to actually run a business, especially online. One is you owning a job, and the other one is you owning a business. Now, once you have the difference figured out, once you have it figured out how to actually do one versus the other, and once you're actually pursuing it, it's totally worth it. But where do you even go to get started? You know, Fizzle is the best business school that I've seen online, at least the format-wise. You know, they cover all the fundamentals of being an online business owner, and then some. And if you want real connections, info, and feedback as you're going along, they have your back. You know, Corbett, Chase, Steph, and the community that's over there can help you go faster. There's just so much experience over there. And unlike most mega Facebook groups, there's no agenda because you're already a paying member. No one is going to get on you for coattailing, which recently happened to me in a Facebook group, because that's what they're there for. And as a member, you can have access to training courses, guidance for your next step, and insanely valuable feedback on their weekly coaching calls. Again, try it out today for 5 weeks free by visiting newinceptions.com/fizzle. Again, that's newinceptions.com/FIZZLE. All right, so that being said, let's get into the conversation with Bren. Show notes and show note extras can be found at newinceptions.com/109. And of course, I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Everyone, welcome back to the show. JC here, and joining me today as co-host is Veronica Karen. How you doing, Veronica?
What's up? I'm here. I'm rocking.
What's everything's going great up north, I'm assuming?
Mm-hmm. It's really hot weather, so I went ahead and got my cat shaved, and now I laugh every time I look at him.
Wow. 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 That's what kind of cat? Like Pomeranian? That has like a lot of hair?
No. Well, he has a lot of hair. He's half Siamese, and then probably a parent was long hair. So he's not long hair, but he has extremely, extremely thick fur. Like,
wow.
So thick. So yeah, he looks really funny.
Oh, wow. 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 That's,
summer. I would not do that.
And you know what's funny is my wife, she's always telling me that I need to like shave the hair of my dogs. And I'm like, no, because one of them just had surgery not too long ago. Aww. And it just, no, we ended up putting a shirt on her because it was just too like in your face all the time.
Oh so, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, today's guest is the co-founder and CEO of Implicit Entertainment, an organization on a mission to revolutionize the entertainment world. He wants to empower people to grow as individuals and to come together as one. And discovering a love for music at a young age, he found success locally with his band, Letterbomb, allowing him the opportunity to release multiple records and perform on tour for audiences all throughout Ontario. And then through his success with the band, he lived the stereotypical rock star life of drinking and partying. And after a 5-year run with the band, he realized he had been going down a dark path consisting of self-destruction, alcoholism, and depression. And he wanted to change that. So searching for answers, he discovered the online world of personal development, immersing himself in books, audio programs, and podcasts, and finding mentors to learn from and relate to, and he began making drastic changes in his lifestyle as a result and inspired others to do the same. And today we're talking with Bren Dubé. Bren, how you doing, man?
I'm just great after you pushing the last.
Dude, that it's apostrophe, man. It's throwing me off, man.
Oh, you have to.
No, I get it all the time. I love it. It's a great icebreaker.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to you know, talking with you and finding out a little bit more about this story of yours. But yeah, I'll shove it off to Veronica to do that.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and catch it and just dive right in. I want to know, so I'm also a coach. I coach entrepreneurs.
Love it.
And so if anything has taught me, if I've learned anything over the time that I've been a coach, it's been that our history and our background really, really shapes everything that we're doing as coaches. And of course, we want to know a lot about that. But I want to kind of even go backpedal further than that. I want to know where you grew up.
Yeah, so I love that. I grew up in Chatham, Kent, Ontario. It's just a small town in Canada. And I love it. I've always really loved it. It's nothing too big, nothing too small either. You know, I feel like it's just the perfect place for a family of four to grow up. So I grew up, you know, with my mom and my dad and my younger brother, Cameron. And you know, as a young kid, just your typical childhood, you know, crazy, getting into trouble. I was always the class clown, always, you know, ruining the teacher's plans. But I never really knew what I wanted to do growing up early. I mean, I remember when they first started asking people, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? Well, who do you want to be? And, you know, oh, there's the fireman and there's the mm-hmm. doctor and the veterinarian. And I remember the one day,
because those are the only options.
Yeah, I remember the one day I'm just sitting there at school and I'm like, what am I going to do? And the teacher finally gets to me and he says, so, Bren, what are you going to do when you grow up? And I just stood up, I smacked my hand on the table and I said, I want to rock. And ever
how old were you?
I was probably like 8. And I figured, you know, ever since that day, I wanted to be a musician. And what really inspired me was my parents were quite the partiers growing up. So we always had people coming over, bringing their friends, you know, all sorts of drinks and stuff. And so I was always that 8-year-old kid who's partying with all the adults, right? And so I was highly influenced by that because, I mean, what I saw at the time, I didn't see alcoholism. I didn't see, you know, partying and binge drinking. What I saw was a group of people having a good time. And what really stuck out to me was one day we had my dad invited a band over to come and play at our house. So he brought his buddies over. They had a band. They had the big drum set, the big amps and everything. And they cramped into our small basement and put on a rock show right there. I think I was 9 years old. And ever since that day, I remember bugging my dad, "Dad, you got to get me a drum set. Dad, you got to get me a drum kit." And eventually he finally did. And I played for a couple years and I hated it. I got so sick of playing music that I just wanted to quit. I remember my dad's driving me to these lessons and I'm crying. I'm like, "Dad, please don't take me to another drum lesson. Please, I don't want to go. I just want to go home and play video games. Come on." And
But how old were you when you started to like really loathe drum lessons?
I had to have been at least like 11 or 12 and I was really just not into it at all. I wanted my video games and that's it. Right, but
do you think like the rigorous schedule that you're supposed to be on in order to practice, like, was it just you're a kid and you just want to be a kid?
I think that's what it was. You know, I think I started to put pressure on myself because I was 9 years old and I was playing the drums and my parents were still having all these parties. They were still having all these people over. So what I was, they would always get me up as kind of like a gimmick, as kind of like an act, like, "Hey, let's let the 9-year-old play a few songs on the drums."
Oh,
you know what I mean? So all of a sudden,
they did that to me too. Like,
using you as a party trick.
Wow. Yeah. I know exactly about that.
I was like, I better be good at these drums because everybody wants me to play for them now. And so I was drumming with 30, 40-year-olds and I'm like 8, 9, 10 and I was just getting into it, right? And so it was a lot of pressure. And at the same time, I just wanted to play video games. And another thing, you know, if I'm being honest, back then, it wasn't the greatest environment, really. Just the partying all the time. And my parents weren't always getting along. And I was often feeling like I was to blame for all that. And initially, I would just escape to music. I would just escape to the drums and go play drums. But after that got, you know, annoying and just... You know, it's music, like anything, art, like any work you get into, it's hard work. And as a 9, 10, 11-year-old, you don't want to work hard. And so I dove into video games. It was a great way for me to just to get away from my problems, to get away from the way I was thinking about life, because I was not a happy teenager. You know, going from 12, 13, 14, 15, I really started to feel like a victim. I really started to feel like, you know, why do I have to be here? You know, my parents just want to party. You know, the school doesn't like me. They don't support my music and what I want to do. You know, I don't really have all that many friends. And I just felt like a victim oftentimes.
Yeah.
I didn't get back. Sorry, go ahead.
It's all right. I just kind of want to rewind for a second and ask, what's your sign?
My sign? What do you mean by this?
Yeah. What month were you born in?
Okay. So April. So I'm a Taurus.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you're later. You're later on in April?
Yeah. April 21st is my birthday.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Oh, almost near the solstice. All right. Curious. Moving on.
Moving on.
Did you stick with the drums?
So I actually didn't stick with the drums. I think what happened was I started getting back into music once my brother became interested. So my brother's 4 years younger than I was. And so by the time he was 9, he wanted to play guitar. And so he was at the same age I was when I wanted to get into music, and he wanted to play guitar and I wanted to play drums, but I was getting bored of the drums. And after only a couple months, he was getting bored of the guitar. So eventually we decided we would trade teachers. And so I would start learning the guitar and he would start learning the drums, and we would just switch teachers. We just switch classrooms.
Did the teachers realize what was going on?
Well, at first they were kind of like, "What? They want to do what? I thought he was doing great. I thought he loved it." And no, it was not the case. But we switched teachers, and here I am. Now I'm a guitar player, and I liked it a lot more because I felt like it was just something new for one. But another thing, I wanted to play around the campfire. Like I told you guys, growing up, my parents were always partying. There was always a basement party or a campfire party, or we were out camping, or we were out at a stag and doe or a wedding or something. And there was always an acoustic guitar guy standing around the fire. And you can't necessarily bring your drum kit around the fire to play drums for everybody. You kind of blow everybody away. And so I wanted to do that. I wanted just a new way to affect people, because one of the things that appealed to me most about music was, hey, look, I pick up a guitar and I play a song and everybody lights up. You know, the room could go from, okay, things are okay, maybe they're a little boring, to all of a sudden there's a guy with a guitar and we're singing and we're dancing, we're having a good time. And I loved having that ability to light people up. And so I got more and more into music. And I mean, the older I got going through high school, I didn't really fit in with a lot of the other kids. I didn't want to play sports. I didn't want to, you know, do a lot of the other things that all the other kids were doing. I just wanted to play music. And so when I found that, I really dove right into it. And anytime I had a problem or something was going wrong, I would go straight to music. And I think that's really, I'm really lucky that I had that, because a lot of other kids, you know, they dive into maybe like video games is what another thing that I would go to, or movies, or even drugs or alcohol, or something more destructive or vandalizing.
Right.
Where you get out there and you start causing
drag
trouble.
Drag racing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so right. Vandalizing.
Music kept me off the streets. So I'm grateful for that.
You know, that's your reason for learning guitar is actually the same reason I learned guitar. Because it brings people together. You can sing along with it. You can't do that. I was playing violin and it's the same problem. First of all, it's delicate. Mm. You can't like bang it on a rock while you're sitting around a campfire and have it survive, but you can't sing with it. And like really even like the community can't sing with it either. So that's actually exactly why I learned to play guitar too.
Yeah.
So
it's a
how did your
instrument? I love it.
It's a great community instrument. It's really wonderful. So how did Letterbaum get started?
So Letterbaum got started probably around the time I was 15 and I'd switched to the guitar. And I was jamming with a buddy from school, my best friend from school, and my younger brother, Cameron, who is now getting pretty good on the drums for a young kid. I think he was 9 or 10 when we first started jamming with Letterbaum. And like I said, anytime I had problems or things weren't going well for me or I wasn't feeling like I was fitting in, I'd go straight to music. But eventually I started writing music. And that's when I really started getting an attachment to being a songwriter, being a musician, because I knew like I could create now. I don't just have to play other people's music. I could play my music that I wrote. And it really helped me to get through a lot of feelings. I mean, the first few songs I wrote were kind of ridiculous. I was 15 and I wrote a song about energy drinks. It was called Wipeout, and it's about the high that you get on energy drinks and then you just wipe out after. But then I started I started getting a little bit more personal with my songwriting, and sure enough, we started a band. We started playing some shows. People were into it. People kept asking us to play. Then we put out a CD. We went to this big time studio. Somebody sent us there to get our CD recorded. And it was kind of like we had this whole rock star vibe. Like everything happened to us so fast. And within a year, couple years, we were touring all around Southern Ontario, like our hometown, our area. People were asking us to play all the time. And we really felt like we had hit it off. We really felt like we had made it. I mean, for a 16-year-old to be playing for, you know, hundreds of people on hundreds of stages, thousands of people eventually, it was getting pretty surreal. And I started really, as I got older, I started thinking, well, I'm a rock star now, so I got to act like a rock star. And so I'd look up to some of my heroes on TV, some of my heroes online. And if you look at the typical rock star, what do? Right? They party. Right, they're crazy, they're wild, they're all over the place, right? And I kind of adopted this attitude and this mentality, and it wasn't just from the people I saw on TV. My family often was like this,
right?
Like my mom's side of the family was pretty calm, pretty tame. You know, we went to Bible school, and then we sat together at dinner and prayed before we ate. But my dad's side of the family was like crazy and wild, and we just wanted to party all the time. And so I started going down that path, but I started taking it really seriously. Where, you know, before we got on stage, I'm 16, 17. I'm like, guys, we got to get drunk before we get on stage. Guys, we got to get high, right? Oh, guys, we got to go to the after party. And it even got to the point where we're touring and we're outside of our town. So like, you know, we're a couple hours away from home. And my younger brother, he's 4 years younger than me, so he's not partying with us. And my best friend, who was also in the band, wasn't even all that into partying either. It was just me. I was just the guy who wanted the party. And I was also the driver, so we'd stay out of town, and I'd be like, guys, we're not going back to town, we're going to go to this after party instead. And eventually, it really created a strain in our relationship where, you know, they thought it was about the music, and I thought it was about the music, but I was acting like it was about the partying. And eventually, this was 2014. It was 2014 going into 2015. And I get a call from my brother saying, hey, I'm going to quit the band. Like, I can't do this anymore. And I was like, my jaw hit the floor. I was just, I couldn't believe it because we were on a roll. We were getting all these shows. We had all these fans. It was like everything we had ever wanted. And we were going all to these parties and everybody was like, you know, wow, you guys are famous. Wow, you guys are Letterbomb. That's amazing. And I think it really went to my head really fast, right?
And where were you when you got that phone call?
So I was at home actually having a couple drinks with friends. This was the day before New Year's Eve.
ironically, right?
Ironically, I was having some drinks with some friends and he calls and I was just, I was furious. I yelled at him. I told him I'd kill him. I was so upset.
Oh my gosh.
That might be a little bit of an exaggeration, but I was, at the time, I felt like I could seriously kill my brother right now. It's like, you cannot be serious. Right. We're making it happen. You want to quit just at the peak of everything?
What did he, like, how did he explain it to you besides just saying, like, I can't do this anymore? Like, what was he telling you?
Well, for him, actually, I felt like he often felt like it was my band. And he was kind of in my shadow and he wasn't really getting to do what he wanted. He was just playing drums for me. And what happened oftentimes is I was taking the leader position in the band because that's just how I am. I get so excited about something. I'm like, guys, we got to go do this. Guys, we got to make this music video. We got to go record this record. We got to play this show and this show. And I get so excited. And I think through my excitement, maybe he didn't feel like he was as part of it. And so he started getting into other things. He started making a YouTube channel, getting into comedy and doing that kind of stuff. And I wasn't for it, right? I was kind of like, Cameron, you know, we got a band. You don't have time for this comedy stuff that you're getting into. Like, come on, bro, slow down, right? And after a while, he got sick of hearing that. And he said, you know, I got to quit the band. And I said, yo, you can't do this. I yelled at him. I told him I'd kill him. And the conversation got pretty heated. And he just hung up on me. Like, we didn't even finish the conversation. And so there was all these, you know, feelings that were left unsettled. And I just went out and I got wasted that night.
Did your friends go with you or did you just say like, I need a peace out?
Oh no, we all went to the bar. You know, I was 19 at this point, freshly 19. So it was like, I'm finally allowed to drink. You know, I was,
like, I was barely allowed.
Yeah. In Canada, 19, you could get drunk at the bars now. And so I was excited and I went and got drunk that night. I probably woke up the next day at like 6 or 7 PM. Like with a hangover, like it was that bad. And I woke up and I get a call from my mom and she's crying hysterically and I can't make out a word she's saying. It's New Year's Eve, it's 7 p.m. So my parents are drunk by now, right? It's party day. It's the party day of the year. Like it's 7 p.m. They're wasted. And I get a call from my mom and she's crying hysterically and I can't make out a word she's saying. So I say, Mom, give the phone to Dad. You're not making any sense right now. And Dad gets on the phone and he's like, you got to go to the hospital right now. Your brother got in a car accident and we can't.
Oh, no.
And he's like, we can't go. We're drunk. Like, we can't get in a car right now. It's not right. And I was the only person with a license who wasn't drunk yet. I was still hungover from the day before, but I figured I could go. And it was scary because like I said, we had just had that conversation not 24 hours before this. And, is so many
your last words,
so much left unsettled. My last words were, I'll kill you. And there he is just about getting killed. And so I get to the hospital and I walk in really trying to hold the tears back, but he's laying there on this hospital bed with a neck brace and he's looking scared. And I didn't know what to say. So I walk up.
He was conscious.
He was conscious and he was okay, thank God. But he was scared. He was scared. And I was scared. I felt that, right? I'd never been in any situation like that. And I just walk up to him and I said, you know, this is what happens when you quit the band, right? And so I totally put it on him. I'm like, Cameron, this is all your fault. You quit the band and then you get in a car accident. It's all your fault, right?
Oh my God.
And, you know, we kind of just laughed about it. Because I didn't really know what to do in that situation. I didn't want to put too much pressure on him or anything, but we just laughed about it. And he said, I'm going to stay here for a few more hours. I got a friend who's going to take me home later. Just don't worry about it. Go have a good time. Because we actually had a show booked for that night. And he quit the band the day before. And then the bass player, who was also supposed to play, quit on me last minute and said, yeah, I'm not coming to the show. Cameron's not going to be there. I'm not going to be there.
That same day.
So I was like, I was left hanging where I had to go play this show thankfully, I had a couple buddies in another band, and the deal was I'll play with you guys if you guys play with me. And so we had the show. I got to play with the band, but it was definitely not the same. And I, the whole time, I'm sitting there drinking, trying to have a good time, but I felt terrible about what had happened. And so I didn't talk to my brother after that for another 20 days, and I really went into a deep, dark depression. Wow. I mean, like, I didn't talk too much about it earlier, but when I was a teenager, you know, first getting into music, I was really depressed. Like, I didn't really know what to do, and I think music really saved my life. There's a few points where, you know, I had felt like there was no place else to go, and I had felt like the only answer would be suicide. And in those couple times that I felt like that, I either had a piece of paper and a pen and I just write it out and like try to get over it right there. Or, you know, thankfully I'd have someone come to me and talk to me, and I'd have someone to talk to about it. But at this point I didn't have that. I didn't feel like writing or playing music because I felt like my dreams have just been shattered, and I didn't have anybody to talk to because I had isolated myself. So for the next 20 days, I just locked myself in my room with some alcohol. I had some weed. I had some video games and Netflix and like junk food. I just ordered a lot of pizza, and I just sat in my room for 20 days and just tried to distract myself in whatever possible way I can from how I felt, you know, instead of just dealing with it. And after those 20 days, I finally decided to call my brother and ask him how he's been, because I figured it's got to be tough on him too. You know, he's been in this band since he was 9, and now he's like 15, 16, and like, what's he going to do now? What's going to happen? And I called him and talked to him, and I was like, you know, bro, I'm not doing so well. And he's like, I'm doing amazing, man. I'm so happy. And I'm like, I was like shocked. I was like, what are you talking about? The band just ended. Like, our lives are over. What's wrong with you? And he's like, oh no, you don't get it, Bren. I watched this video. It's like a book. It's like 10 hours long, and it's called Think and Grow Rich. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, you're happy because you found a get-rich-quick scheme? Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, no, dude, you got to check out this book. You got to read it, or listen to it at least, because me and him, we're not really readers so much. But when he found an audiobook, I was like, okay, maybe I'll try the audiobook. Because before then, I haven't really ever read a book. I was a terrible student. I didn't want anything to do with school or reading or learning or any of that. I just wanted to rock, right?
Yeah.
So finally, you know, I'm in my darkest moment and I'm contemplating suicide and I don't know where to turn next. And I said, well, screw it. You know, if this is making Cameron happy, maybe I'll get something from it. And I turn it on and I listen to like the first 15 minutes, and instantly I had a connection with what the author Napoleon Hill was saying, you know, just talking about how all these successful people, the people who we look up to, have all been through tough times. They've all, like, if you look at some of the greatest leaders today, they're not the greatest leaders because they had a nice ride the whole time because everything was perfect for them. They're the greatest leaders because they've dealt with the most trouble. They've dealt with the most trials, the errors, the difficulties, the obstacles. Those are the people who have really surpassed things. And at that point, I felt like I was going through quite the obstacle. You know, my band doesn't want to play with me anymore. And I want to be a rock star, and I want to do this. I want to make people smile. I want to light people up, but I can't anymore because I don't have a band. And so this book really got me hooked. I remember I listened to the whole thing, and I was practicing guitar as I was listening to it because I was trying to be ultra productive. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I could practice scales and listen to this at the same time. Oh my gosh. And so I started listening to that. And then I started going on YouTube and looking up other personal development things. And I mean, it just felt like I discovered this whole world that I didn't think existed before. And so I was, you know, and I started listening to Tony Robbins, and he had a huge impact on me. I remember taking Tony Robbins tapes to work. So I was working in landscaping. I couldn't do the music thing anymore, and I had to, you know, pay my bills. I was 19, an adult now, so I was cutting grass for a living. But what my bosses didn't know was I also had my MP3 player in my pocket with all of Tony Robbins' programs, his Personal Power, his Get the Edge, and all that stuff. And I had the 10-hour-long Napoleon Hill book, and I just said, okay, look, I just got to learn. I just got to listen. And so for 8 hours a day, I'm cutting grass and I'm listening to Napoleon Hill. I'm listening to Tony Robbins. I'm listening to all these teachers and all these leaders, these coaches, and just trying to absorb all this information that had never been exposed to me before. Like, they didn't teach you this stuff. They don't teach you how to manage your emotions in school. They don't teach you how to chase your dreams. They don't teach you how to do what you like, be productive and be happy and like deal with the negative emotions and deal with your problems. They never taught me that in school. And so for a person who hated learning, for a person who hated all this stuff and didn't want nothing to do with it, all of a sudden I was a junkie. I was like, oh my gosh, I got to get it in me. And so I was listening to all this stuff and learning lots. And finally, I started taking my health seriously. And after, I think, a year or so, you know, I'd gone vegan. I'm eating completely healthy food. I'd quit the alcohol. I had quit a lot of the other drugs that I was doing. And I started eating healthy. I started exercising consistently. I lost like 60 pounds. I had this whole newfound energy, this whole newfound health. And I had never thought ever about teaching it to other people or sharing it with other people, right? Because I always considered myself, look, I'm a student. Like I'm still learning this stuff. I'm 22 years old at the time. I'm 23 now. But I didn't feel comfortable sharing it with other people initially because I didn't really know how. I didn't think it was for everybody. I was like, well, this might not be for you, but I know it's definitely for me because I need this stuff, right?
Right.
And then after a few months, you know, just talking with old friends and old friends asking me, like, what is up with you? Why are you so energetic? Why are you so happy? Like, why are you so happy? Like, what happened to you? Like, you're a different person. And that's when I started thinking, man, like, maybe I should start sharing this stuff. Like, maybe I should, like, shouldn't just keep it to myself. If this is helping me, maybe it could help other people too. And so that's when I really got started in speaking and writing. And I do blogs and podcasts and I'm an author. I've written, I think, like 4 or 5 books now. They're just short ebooks, but you know, whatever I feel like at the time, if I'm feeling inspired to share, then I share. And it eventually led to me teaming up with a group of people, great people from where I'm at, Julie Ross, my brother, actually, me and my brother started teaming up again because, I mean, the two of us had this whole new outlook. We had this whole new energy. It wasn't just music anymore. Now it was about how could we make people happy like we're happy? How could we share these cool tools and these insights that we've learned with other people so that we're not the only ones with this crazy bouncing off the wall energy? And we created this company called Implicit Entertainment. And it was really cool because it wasn't just me. I love working as a team. So we had this whole team of people who all kind of had a similar goal of inspiring people to live a happier life. And we started our first project, I think, was a documentary. We recorded 12 artists. We did 12 music videos. And then we had an interview with each artist kind of about, you know, why do you play music? And it was also in support of a friend of ours named Emily Heim, who is a humanitarian and she does a ton of work in Haiti. She runs an orphanage there. And we wanted to support a good cause, somebody who's doing something good. And at the same time, we wanted to do something fun. And fun for us was make music videos. So it was really cool. It was really fun. And the rest is history. I mean, we started doing podcasts. We did this podcast called Leading Life once a week where me and my brother would get on there and just talk about ourselves and about our experience, you know, because it was weird for us at first, like, because we're young kids. Like, I was 21. He was, like, 17. It's like, we're going to get on this podcast and teach these other people, you know, what we've learned about happiness and about success and stuff. And it felt weird at first because it was like, well, are we really qualified to talk about this stuff? But then as we got into it a little bit more and we started talking about more or less our personal experience and not so much, you know, hey, I'm going to teach you how to live, rather just like, look, this is who I am and what's worked for me. Maybe it could help you. Maybe it could work for you. And, I mean, soon enough, we started picking up the pace and we were doing 5 podcasts a week, Monday through Friday, 5 episodes a week. And we were doing a ton of that stuff. And at the same time, I was doing solo shows. I was performing as a musician all the time. And I was eventually able to quit my job and just do this music thing and do this Implicit thing full time. And so that's kind of where we're at that's now. So right?
Cool. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. So, a lot of stuff covered there. Lots of stuff.
Wow. I should have warned you guys before the show that I could just talk and talk and talk forever.
One of the things that I seem to, question comes to mind, you know, what would have happened to you had your brother not quit? Like, it seems that knocked you into your own kind of thing and of self-development and making yourself better. But here's the thing that I want you to kind of think about is like, if he hadn't quit, you wouldn't have gotten into like improving yourself. Mm. And so I got to ask you, it's like, do you feel that a lot of people are kind of going down that path that, you know, they're not necessarily, they're kind of on idle, or not idle, but kind of on cruise control and just letting what's popular in society teach them? Because one of the things that, you know, I'm hearing a lot about these days is something called generational rhythms. And, you know, there's this theory called the Strauss-Howe generational theory. And there's four types of generations. They say that, you know, there's the prophet, the nomad, the hero, and the artist. And, you know, if you believe this theory, you believe that millennials are supposed to be this next hero generation, which you've actually become based, you know, again, based on the fact that, you know, your brother is like turned you on to this stuff. Mm-hmm. And again, it wouldn't have happened if he hadn't quit the band. And then, you know, if you look more into this theory, the last generation that this hero generation was a part of was between World War I and World War II, for our history nuts that are listening to the show. You know, the thing is that I don't see us being set up because of everything, again, that's going on with society. We don't... It's like we're being programmed to do kind of that party route that you were, you know, you had gone down.
Oh, for sure.
And then there's obviously, you know, or at least what's expected of you. And then there is this, you know, this hero route where, you know, people, again, like us here on the show and a lot of our listeners are going down. So, in fact, I got to kind of interject this little thing in there. And I was reading this last night. It was a thread on Reddit. The question was, if you could quit your job and pursue your hobby full time with financial security, what hobby would you pursue?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, can't you just make that the same thing, sort of thing? I mean, it's just like so many people are stuck believing that they have to be miserable and doing a job and spending their time doing this other thing.
Right.
And where I consider part of the lost, whereas those of us who are in the know realize that you can actually go after your dreams. And, you know, I can tell from your talk that you've had this transformation from one side to the other. And yeah, I just kind of wouldn't be interested in what your perspective is on all of this.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about. And even before this whole experience with my brother quitting the band, like my last year in high school, they put a lot of pressure on you to decide right now exactly where you want to go and what you're going to do. And a lot of the kids that I went to school with, they weren't really ready for that kind of pressure. They didn't really know how to deal with it. So, you know, oh, they tell me to go to this college so that I could get this job. I might as well do it. Or my parents say, hey, I might as well go here and do that. And there's a lot of societal pressures to be a certain way, to go a certain path. I mean, I know from my own perspective, my perspective was, look, you graduate high school, you go to college, you party a lot until you find somebody who you fall madly in love with. You fall in love with them, you finish college, you get a job, you marry this person you love, you have a family, okay, now you have a family, so you're done partying, you work and work and work until you retire, and you retire mm-hmm. and you go and travel the world, do fun stuff, and you die.
Like, right.
That's just what I thought you'd do.
The battery life, if you think about the Matrix, you know, that's what you do.
Yeah.
And what I saw was, All my teachers, they're like, you got to go to a music college to do this music thing. But I had known, I had known from talking to other musicians who have gone to music college, are like, don't do it. It's a waste of time. Just go out there and pursue your dreams. Just do what you got to do. You don't want to be in debt all this money because it's just going to hold you back. It's going to discourage you, all this stuff. So at a young age, I knew I wasn't going to follow the traditional path. I knew I wasn't going to go and do what everybody else did. And when I knew I had done the right thing, was 1 year. I mean, by the time I was 19, all my old friends had gone to college and they're 18 when they go to college and they all come home at 19 because they all decided they hated what they were doing. And now they're $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in debt and they got to work a job that they hate so that they could pay off the money that they, you know, went to school for, even though they didn't get a degree, they didn't like it, they're not getting a job in the field, nothing. It was like they had followed this path that apparently you're supposed to follow and they were miserable. And not only were they miserable, they were in debt. And now they were like this slave to, you know, the decisions they had made. And I had known right away, I was like, man, I cannot do that. Like, I just can't. And I don't know why I thought that way. Maybe part of it is because my parents didn't always have like a big say in what we were going to do as kids. I remember I was 11, 12 years old and I was hanging out in the streets till 3 a.m. like with my buddies. Like my parents, I feel like part of them trusted me to do the right thing, and then part of them just didn't care what I did. And so I'd come home with my report card. Okay, I got D's and C's. They give me a little pep talk. Bren, you know, you got to try harder in school. You know, you got to do better. You could be more successful. And I just shrug it off and then go back to doing what I was doing. And so that was a good thing for me in a way, because it allowed me to make my own decisions and build my own path and go my own way. But at the same time, you know, who knows what would have happened if my parents would have pushed me to go to school and do that whole thing. But I mean, what I've learned is most people I find are stuck in between this breakdown and this breakthrough. And the breakdown is really what I had when my brother gave me that call. It was like the breakdown is when things are so bad, when you don't know where to go next, like things, it feels like things can't get any worse. I mean, for me, I still had a roof over my head. I still had video games and Netflix. Like I still had food in my cupboards. Like I had all these things for me going for me. But I wasn't acknowledging them. Rather, I was focusing on how, look, it's done. Like, I tried. I failed. It's over. I don't know what I'm going to do next. Yeah. I felt like it couldn't get any worse. And so I was at this breakdown point where I was open to criticism. I was open to a new path. I was open to new lessons.
Do you think there's any way of reaching back to people that are in that situation? Like, where you're at now, do you have, like, a personal way of reaching back to people that are waiting for that next step, or they're trying to figure out what's next?
Well, yeah, like I think there's really two ways. And like I talk about the breakdown, and that's where things are so bad. And I don't wish that on anybody. That's your rock bottom. It's like, if you could find yourself on a new path, if you could find yourself going towards the direction, or at least making progress to where you want to be without reaching the breakdown, without reaching the rock bottom, then please do that, because rock bottom sucks. But at the same time, like I said earlier, rock bottom is where most people find their strength. It's where most people find their resilience to go forward, to push through. I mean, some people reach that point and just give up and quit. And we know today, you know, there's this whole suicide epidemic where people are committing suicide more. There's more suicide deaths than there are war and natural disaster put together at this point in history. And it's crazy, because people reach this rock bottom and they don't know where else to go. Maybe they don't get the support that they need. Whatever it is, you know, it's a different case for everybody. And it's a touchy subject, because it's really powerful. It's really heavy. And again, I don't wish that rock bottom on anybody. But that's certainly one way to get yourself to the next level. Because when I was at that point, when I was at so much pain, it's like you're just ready for anything. Like you're ready for a book to come by and save you. You're ready for a mentor or a friend. You're just like, come on, show me the way out of here, please. And then on the other side of the spectrum, there's the breakthrough. You know, there's a point where you're just so inspired. There's so many, either you're in a good environment where people are supporting you or pushing you or pulling you forward, or maybe there's a movie you watch or a book or some sort of piece of entertainment or education or a mentor, something that inspires you to push forward. And that's the whole other end of the spectrum. But what I find is most people aren't at the breakdown where it's so bad they have to change. And they're not at the breakthrough where it's so good they want to change, right? Instead, they're numb. They're just in the middle where, you know, I don't feel good. Let me take a pill.
Right. Those are like the shells of people that we see walking around that they never get out. And it just starts to like settle and get stuck forever almost.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you smack those people in the face? I guess that's my question. How do you wake them up?
See, this is what I think it really comes down to: inducing a breakdown or inducing some kind of breakthrough. And what I mean by that, if you're going to induce a breakdown, for me, it happened to me whether I liked it or not. My brother quit the band, and I had gone through this whole phase of, you know, who am I? What am I doing? Why am I here? What's it worth? And these are the kind of questions that I think help induce a breakdown or a breakthrough, right? Like it really comes down to sitting down and putting yourself through it. Right. And because so many people, they try to avoid it. Like I talk about my first 20 days in that depression. What did I do? I sat in my room, played video games. I smoked weed. I got drunk. I ate junk food. I did anything I can to distract myself from asking those questions that I had to ask to get to the next level. I didn't want to ask myself who I was. I didn't want to ask myself why I was here because I was afraid of the answers.
And you were giving yourself a hell of a lot of dopamine too.
Well, yeah, exactly. So you're
exactly.
I love the dopamine.
Well, I was just the reason I bring that up is because so many people are like, you know, I think that's one of the things that, you know, gets people addicted to Facebook is that it get constantly giving you that high, or, you know, all these other things that, you know, addictions or whatever, be it gaming or Facebook or social media or whatever, that's always giving you that feel good thing.
Yeah.
And so it's just, yeah, I just, if you know people that are stuck there, that's what's going on. It's their escapism.
Yeah. And you know, you talk about it's that escapism, and there's nothing wrong with escapism to an extent. I mean, we all need, you look at some of the most successful people in the world, they've got their escapism. They've got their football or their you know, video games. I remember reading Elon Musk, you know, the guy's changing the world. He's going to Mars. He's creating Tesla. He's doing all these solo projects, and he plays lots of video games. He loves video games.
Okay.
Right? And it's like, we all need that break, that escapism to get out, you know, go hang out with friends. But when it becomes an addiction, that's when it's a problem, right? Because instead of, we're looking to feel good all the time instead of looking to do good. And I think that's where the problem is. It's like, okay, I could smoke this weed and get drunk and I'll feel really good. But am I doing good for myself? Am I doing good for others? Am I doing good for the world as a whole? Not necessarily. And that's where that's where this distraction thing comes in. And I think it's what I've learned is so many people are out there, and especially at my age, the millennials and the people who are, you know, trying to find their way, trying to find their path, they're looking to find themselves, right? Like, who am I? Am I going to find myself? Maybe I'll watch TV and I'll find myself on TV. Maybe I'll go to this college that I don't really care about and maybe I'll find myself there. Maybe I'll move away to this new town and I'll find myself over there. And what you're really doing there is you're looking to find yourself in outside circumstances. You're looking to find yourself in somebody else or somewhere else. And what I've really learned and what I've done for myself and what I think is more productive, just because it's my personal experience, is instead of finding yourself, you create yourself, right? You design yourself. You decide, like, just make a decision. Who am I? Why am I here? What's the point? Like, all these questions that you're avoiding when you're doing drugs, that you're avoiding when you're getting drunk, which you're avoiding when you decide, okay, I'm not going to work right now. I'm not going to think right now. I'm just going to watch Netflix. What you're doing is you're avoiding the tough questions that are going to free you from this funk that you're in, from this rut that you're in. And so I think the best way to get out of that numb phase of, okay, things aren't quite good enough, but they're not quite bad enough for me to change, is to sit down either alone with a piece of paper, or sit down with a coach, sit down with a professional, and ask yourself the tough questions that you might not be asking yourself. Even if it's just with a friend who really cares, like a friend who you really love or who you know will listen to you, sit down and have that conversation. I mean, for me, I had that conversation 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for like 6 months when I was working at Owls, right? Because I was always listening to these audiobooks. I was listening to this podcast, these personal development materials. All this stuff I was just dumping it into my mind like it was ridiculous. I would listen to the same tape 4 times over in a day just to drill it in there so that it becomes part of me. And so there was no avoiding the tough questions anymore, right? Tony Robbins, when he's talking to you, he doesn't let you avoid the tough questions. He's like, yo, you got to figure this out right now.
And that helps cause that transition for his listeners. So like all this listening that you did, this like insane amount of consumption that you did in a short period of time, that all has fed into you building out these three pillars of change that you talk about, right? Like, that's the foundation for all of that. Tell us about those.
Yeah. So I was asked to do a TEDx talk, because in my community, people know me from being a rock star, right? And then when I made this 180 shift, people are kind of like, aren't you a punk rocker? Like, aren't you like partying all the time, whatever? And I'd made all these changes. And so there's a few people in the community who recognize that. And they asked me, they're like, we would love if you would get up and do a TEDx speech and tell us about your story. Tell us about your transformation. And this was still early in my transformation at the time. I mean, look, I'm 23 years old. I'm still going through it, right? And I think you guys could attest to this too. Growing, learning, finding your way, it's a never ending journey. Like, you're always going to be looking to grow and looking to change and looking to make progress. But like you said, through this insane consumption, which is a great word for it, insane, I really I started to find these patterns in what these people were saying. So Tony Robbins was the big one who I listened to a lot. And like I said before, Napoleon Hill. And I started getting into other other books and stuff. I remember reading The Compound Effect. I remember reading, I did a lot of YouTube videos. Do you guys know who Ralph Smart is? He's he does Infinite Waters. He's got like a million subscribers on YouTube. He's got an amazing community. And just listening to all this stuff and practicing it myself and putting it into action, I wanted to simplify it so that I could share it with other people, because it was more to me than just about, you know, and there's so much to the personal development world. There's so much. I could sit here all day. We could have a 10, 20 hour podcast about all the things that I know, all the things that you guys know about growing and personal development and all that. But I wanted to simplify it so I could give an 18 minute talk. Because as you guys know, I could talk forever. So if I better just condense this to 18 minutes. And so I came up with this. I say I came up with it, but really it's just a matter of listening and putting together a pattern. And what I found was there's these three pillars of change. And they're really inspiration, motivation, and transformation. And it's in that order specifically. And if you want to simplify that even more, it's the what, why, and how. And I remember thinking back to when I was a kid and I was in like grade one or grade two. When they ever had you want, when you were supposed to solve a problem, they said, pick up your hand and look at your hand and ask yourself five questions. So it was like, what, why, when, where, how, right? You got those five questions. And I remember that because I could look at my hand and go, what, why, when, where, how. And those are really important questions to ask. And it's simple, but that's what you ask when it comes to solving any kind of problem or getting writing down a goal or whatever it is. And so I simplified it down to what, why, and how, you know, the inspiration, motivation, and transformation. The first step to that is really inspiration. And that's when we talk about how people who are numb, you know, they're stuck in between breakdown and breakthrough. And the inspiration is really you find something so inspiring or so amazing. Maybe it was a movie you watched that had a profound effect. Maybe it was a quote that you read at the perfect time. Maybe it was a person who you saw who just inspired you by the way they are, just by who they are. Or maybe the inspiration is on the other end. Like on my situation, you know, you've done so many drugs, you got so drunk, you've distracted yourself so much, all these video games, everything. You feel so crappy about yourself or about your life that you decide, I can't do this anymore. I have to change. And so there's some sort of inspiration. And what happens in that moment is you decide what it is you want, right? We talked about this. You don't look for, you're not looking to find yourself. You're deciding right then and there, I'm going to create this sort of destiny, whatever it is. And that leads you to the second step, which most people often skip. You know, we ask, okay, what do I want in my life? This is what I want. Okay, how am I going to get it? And we skip, we skip the why. And there's a whole, that's why there's a motivational industry, is because so many people forget why they do what they do, right? They just take it for granted. They just take it as an assumption. And so I put a lot of emphasis on this and this step two, the motivation, because you got to really know why you do what you do, or why you're going to go pursue this goal, or why you're going to change your life, or why you're going to quit the drugs and focus on, you know, this new path in your life, this new hobby or this new career, this new relationship or whatever it is you want to do. And that's so important because it's your motivation, because times are going to get tough. Things are going to suck. You're going to fail. But if you forget why you're doing what you're doing, then why would you even keep going when things get tough, right? And so I put a lot of the emphasis on that. And if I could reference to my story, it was like, why am I changing my life? Why do I care about my health? Why don't I just quit? Why? And the reason for me was really, you know, I felt like I still had so much more in me. I was 20 at the time when all this happened to me. And I was like, wow, like if I really think about it, my first reaction was, my life's over. There goes my band. And my next reaction was, damn it, I'm 20 years old and I could do anything I want at this point. It's a whole new slate.
Yeah.
Right. And the possibilities are endless. I don't have any student debt. I don't have any real like ties or anything. Like I could go ahead and do whatever I want. And this doesn't just apply to 20-year-olds. This applies to anybody. I mean, even if you have a job full time and a family, you could find a couple hours in your day to do something new if you were really committed to it. And at that point I was. And my why for me was, if I don't get up and do something, if I don't get up and change something, I'm gonna kill myself. And that was scary. That was scary to me.
Oh yeah. And I know that dialogue actually. I know exactly what you're saying.
Well, I find it's people like us, you know, the people like your listeners, the people who are striving to do more, striving to change, striving, you know, high achievers. They put that kind of pressure on themselves. Good or bad, it's there, you know. And that for me was a big motivation to want to change and want to figure out how to change my life. And that's the how is the easiest part, right? That's step three, the transformation. And if you want to know how to transform your life, like go to Google, open up your phone right now, go to Google and type how to change your life. And I promise you, you will get so much information. It'll be, you won't even know what to do with it all. Like, that's why I emphasize inspiration, motivation before you look for a transformation. Because the transformation,
you need the fuel.
Yeah, the transformation is the easy part. You just turn on the TV and watch Dr. Oz. Oh, this person just lost 250 pounds. Wow, how'd they do it? Right? Like, that's the easy part. There's a how-to for almost anything nowadays, right?
But you need the fuel.
You need the fuel. Right. And that's where that's why the first two things come in first, because not everything could be answered by Google. Your what and your why can't necessarily be answered by Google. That's going to take some self-reflection. No. That's going to take maybe some meditation. That's going to take maybe some conversation with a professional or with a friend for you to really figure out what it is you want and why you want it. And then once you got those two steps down and you feel confident and you're inspired and you're motivated, that's when you could finally search for the how-to and start putting things in step. Because I find so many people, they skip straight to the how do I do it? And then they learn how to do it. And then they realize, wow, that's kind of hard. Maybe I'm not going to do that. Right?
Yeah.
You just can't
skip to that. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. That's actually, I draw my clients down with me in that book by Simon Sinek called Start With Why. Mm. You know, like, it's exactly the point that you're making, is that like entrepreneurship is hard. Going for your dreams is hard. It's like, it's never easy. Not one moment of it, but it's the passion and it's the why that keeps us going. So with that in mind, I'm curious, what is on the horizon for you? What do you have coming up next that is exciting you?
Well, right now, I mean, I'm still in the learning phase where I'm still, mm-hmm. Consuming lots, learning lots, listening to lots of podcasts. I don't think that's ever going to end for me. I think I'm always going to be a student of life, for lack of a better word.
That's a good attitude.
But I'm at a point right now where on my birthday a couple months ago, April 21st is my 23rd birthday, and I released my first debut album as a solo artist. So I'm really stepping forward, and I'm pursuing this music thing just on my own, right? Like, I still perform, I still jam with lots of other musicians, but mm-hmm. I found, it's really, there's a whole other intimacy, I guess, to performing on your own. I feel like I'm really, when I perform on stage, when I sing these songs I wrote, I'm really giving myself away. And a lot of the things I talk about are also things I sing about in my music. It's just my life. It's just my experience. It's just who I am. Like, I'm not no rocket scientist. I can't tell you about, I can't tell you about how to shoot a rocket to the moon. But when we start talking about, life, and we start talking about personal experience and depression and motivation and potential suicide, like, that's stuff that I know. That's stuff that I've lived. And so I feel really comfortable talking about that stuff and sharing that with others, because I feel like, that's how I could help people. And that's where I'm at right now, is just trying to write more music, get my music out there, share with people my own personal experience in the hope that it'll help them as well. And that looks like all sorts of things. Like, I did the TEDx speech. I've got a few more speeches up coming out. I've written books at this point. I mean, I don't even read books, and I've written books, guys. That's how committed I am to sharing my story, I'll listen to books if you got an audiobook version, but, just any little thing I could do to inspire people, with who I am. And that's where I'm at right now. And that's where I am moving forward. How it looks necessarily, like I said, it could be a book, it could be a speech, it could be another record, it could be another podcast. Whatever I could do to inspire people and share my story, because I know, if 19-year-old Bren met 23-year-old Bren today and they had a conversation, I feel like it'd be a really profound conversation. Thinking about that, I don't know what 19-year-old Bren would think of 23-year-old Bren. What, you don't drink no more? What's your problem, man? Not even a sip? What up?
how dare you? You ruined our life.
But I just know, coming from that dark place in my life, I just hope that I could find or inspire other people who are in that place to find their path, to do what it is that they want to do, to live their life the way they want to live their life, without the pressures or without the, you know, all the things that hold us back from pursuing our dreams, you know?
Right. Right. As we're going into the rapid fire questions, I got a little bit of a warning disclaimer sort of thing. They're going to be throwing at you kind of quick, but you know, you can elaborate a little bit and don't feel like you have to actually answer them super quickly.
Okay.
But just want to get you that preface there. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. What are your three top favorite books that you recommend or gift to others these days?
These days, you know, I'd go Think and Grow Rich is like the one that I give away to so many people. And like I said, I don't read as much as I love audio programs. And so if I could recommend an audio program, I'd say Personal Power by Tony Robbins, another one that had a huge effect on me. And then he has another program called Get the Edge. I think he did a revised version recently called The Ultimate Edge, but that's the stuff that really, it's the bread and butter of like, okay, I need to learn something that could change me. Go to that, right?
Nice.
What is something you wish was still a thing?
Do you guys remember, there was this computer game I played when I was a kid called RuneScape. And I remember I was asking a few of my buddies, do you guys still play RuneScape? That stuff was great. And just like, no, RuneScape's not cool anymore. I wish it were still cool.
Aww.
Yeah, well, and there's gonna be a thing, I think, when all these Minecrafters.
Yeah, Minecraft.
Yeah, they're all gonna like be like, man, remember all those days and years that we put into Minecraft? It's just like, yeah, about that.
Been there. I made this. I remember I'd probably spend like 40, 50 hours building like this giant sandcastle with a buddy of mine, and then our save got deleted, and it was like so heartbreaking. Like, no, we won't be able to show it off.
Nuts. Wow. What is an unwritten rule that would really just be written down at this point out there?
I think like just like smile. Like I feel like smiling is such a cool thing that like it just makes you feel good. It makes other people feel good. And like people just don't do it enough. I walk down the street and there's so many frowns. Like, dude, smile.
Yeah.
Where are you at these days? I mean, you're up in Canada. I mean, I would imagine that, you know, they're always smiling up there. And
hey, that's a stereotype. We're more American over here than you think.
We have JC.
There's so much Trump arguments. Like we got people arguing about Trump. It's like, dude, you're Canadian. Oh, like, can we? Sorry. No, we're pretty close. We're like an hour away from Detroit. So I feel like we're half half American, just about.
Yeah, you're quite close. JC's from the South. He doesn't know anything below the bottom of Michigan is South.
Well, yeah, whatever. I'm just down here in Indy. Whatever.
What is one thing you believe all high school students must know?
Oh, it's got to be, I think emotion is a huge one. How to control your emotion, how to snap yourself out of those bad habits, how to get yourself into a positive state. They never taught me that in school, and I really wish they had, because yeah, I still have my days where I get in a bad mood and I don't even know why I'm in a bad mood. Right. But thankfully I've done the research. I know how to change it at this point. But I mean, there's people who wake up in a bad mood and then they just let themselves go in a bad mood all day. And then it just shits on their whole future. And it's like, ah, I wish we knew how to change that fast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh, we could go down the rabbit hole on this one.
For sure.
What's it mean to live a life of abundance?
I think a life of abundance, I mean, for me personally, it's really just a life where you do things that you want to do. You're living life on your terms, going where you want to go, being who you want to be, and also with the people you want to be with. Just an abundance of happiness, an abundance of health, can mean an abundance of wealth, but really abundance, yeah, to me, it just means, you know, you're doing what you want to do, when you want to do. When you want to do it, how you want to do it, with the people you want to do it with, just living your life and not so much focusing on, you know, the lack in the world or how much you don't have. Instead, you focus on, like, I've got, you know, a nice family. I've got some cool friends. You know, I get to do what I like to do, podcasts or music or sports or whatever it is. And I think that's plenty for a person who wants to be happy.
Right. Right. And what are a few things that someone that wants to start doing that can start doing today?
Well, you know, I think I'm a strong believer in just journaling and just writing down your thoughts or just talking about it, asking yourself the tough questions and answering them. So that could be as simple as, you know, a pros and con list of my life. Like, what are the great things that I love and what are the things I don't love so much? And when you make that list, you could kind of compare the two and think, wow, like, there's a lot more pros than I thought there were, or maybe there's a lot more cons than I thought there were, and I have to sort through those things. But just putting it out there gives you a chance to change it, right? Instead of just, you know, brushing it off or just not thinking about it or just living your life numb, just let it out. Talk about it. Write about it. Get it out there. Settle it, right? I'm a huge strong believer in that.
Awesome.
All right, Brent. So to wrap things up, if somebody wants to find you, they want additional help, they want to hear more about you, your work, where do they go?
Yeah, so I'm all over social media. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff, at Bren Social. That's just B-R-E-N Social. And just send me a message. You can add me as a friend on Facebook, whatever you want to do. Like, I love connecting with people who, even if you just have a question or you just want to chat or you just want to tell me about your life and your story, I like hearing about that. Just add me on Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff. I'm making music all the time. I'm starting to get into vlogging a little bit more. I find that super fun because you get a whole new perspective on who I am in my life, and you know, it's just silly and fun. So yeah, add me on all that stuff at Bren Social.
All right. Awesome.
Yoo-hoo!
Well, Bren, definitely appreciate you being on, and it was fun.
Hey, thank you guys. I love the chemistry you two have together. It's certainly like, it feels like a good show that you guys are putting on here. So I appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed that chat with Bren today. I love what he's all about. And, you know, the truth is, it resonates so well with Adjunto and helping people find their mission in life. And, you know, the world needs what he's giving in his message. So in the show note extras, there's a couple of recent music videos of his. A cover of him playing a Foo Fighters song called Razor, and I'll also be posting his TEDx video there as well. If you like what you see there, feel free to connect with him through his YouTube channel or on Facebook. Links to those will be in the show notes as well at newinceptions.com/109. So that is a wrap for today. Next time in session 110, I get to chat with a friend of Daniel Postma's named Glenn Livingston. And if you haven't heard of Glenn, he's a veteran psychologist who, for the longest time, was actually CEO of a multi-million-dollar consulting firm, which serviced several Fortune 500 clients in the food industry. And over that time, he kind of gained weight, as we all do when we're busy. And he developed a new interest in helping people who struggle with overeating or binging, because he was able to get over it. Now he wants to help others. And, you know, the truth is that it's a topic that I think needs to be addressed, because even in our own creative lives, you know, we might struggle with this from time to time. And, you know, we have our eight crazy ups and downs and in our overall health. And he's going to be here to help us smooth some of that out. So that one is coming out next in session 110. And yeah, that's pretty much it, guys. Remember that if you're starting this whole new business thing yourself, make sure to check out Fizzle for 5 weeks for free at newinceptions.com/fizzle. And that said, thanks for joining myself, Veronica, and Bren in this awesome chat. Till next time, gang, dig in, have fun, and take care of whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.